Welcome back, everyone. This is the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks, and I cover the Steelers and Browns for BleacherReport.com and the Browns for the Orange and Brown Report at Scout.com. And pretty soon might have a few interesting announcements, maybe next week, to tell you all about. Again, I'm your host here, and I'm joined, of course, like I usually am, by my co-host, Brian.
Yo.
We've been gone for about 2 months here from this here podcast, of course, during one of the slowest times in the NFL's news cycle. But now that we're in the month of July, training camps start up for most teams at the end of the month. And, of course, we are just 1 month and 1 day away from the Hall of Fame game being played between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Minnesota Vikings, which kicks off the NFL's preseason schedule of games.
I know, so that's good news.
So it's as good a time as any to bring this here podcast back from its short off-season hiatus.
Absolutely.
And of course, even though this is the slowest time of year in the NFL, the month between minicamp and training camp where players are left to their own devices, that does not mean that the NFL is not a source of compelling news.
Of course not.
Case in point, two fireworks accidents took place during the 4th of July weekend. We shouldn't laugh, though. I mean, we're talking about significant injuries here. We'll start with
the
more.
It just sounds silly.
We'll start with the more straightforward of the two, because the second one I want to get more in depth into, because it's more complicated. First, of course, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers cornerback C.J. Wilson, who lost two of his fingers in a fireworks accident in North Carolina. He is in his final season on a 2-year deal, set to make a non-guaranteed $585,000 this year. He appeared in two games for the Buccaneers last season, totaled 4 tackles. And this year in the offseason in OTAs and minicamp has been serving as a third-team cornerback. So I am supposing that Wilson's NFL career is clearly in jeopardy after this injury, especially because who knows how complicated the process is going to be for him to recover from this. And of course, when you talk about the nature of his position as a defensive back, trying to bat passes, intercept passes, things like that become a little bit more difficult when you're missing two fingers on one of your hands. Not impossible. That's something you could absolutely adapt to. But whether or not the Buccaneers will give him the time to adapt to that, especially because he's a third string cornerback who's kind of hanging out in the roster bubble already.
Yeah, it's hard enough to, like, stay on the team.
It's hard enough to stay on the team as a third-string corner.
Yeah. Third-string whatever.
Working with the third team. So, that's not good news for him. And obviously, it's just, I don't want to think about somebody blowing their fingers off, you know?
Well, it's funny because there's always, post-4th of July holidays and whatnot, there's always weird stories all over the country.
Of course.
Regular people and, I don't know. I read something about some guy dying. He put a mortar on his head, like tried to light it off his head or
something
like
that. That's a completely terrible thing to do. That will get you killed. I don't know. I mean, I understand that he was drunk and stuff, but.
but it's funny that not only did we get one of those stories coming from the NFL circles, but we got two this year. So
yes, the second being the one I want to kind of go in depth here on is New York Giants defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul.
Slightly more high profile.
Slightly more high profile, and it comes with it its own set of complicated situations outside of this injury. Jason Pierre-Paul on July 4th also suffered a hand injury caused by fireworks. Initially, the reports were that it wasn't that serious of an injury, but as the day has progressed, as the days have progressed, and especially today here on Wednesday, we've actually learned a lot more about this injury and that, in fact, it is quite serious. With Jason Pierre-Paul getting his right index finger amputated, as reported by ESPN's Adam Schefter, who also tweeted out a photograph of the actual medical document stating that Jason Pierre-Paul had his finger amputated, causing quite the kerfuffle, especially in Twitter circles about HIPAA violations and things like that. But just to be clear, we don't know exactly who leaked this or if there was any consent on the part of Jason Pierre-Paul or his agent, and ESPN would not be in trouble for Schefter tweeting out that photograph. It would be if there was a HIPAA violation, the hospital or hospital employees or employee who actually handed over the documents. So now we're clear on that. So Ian Rappaport of NFL Network said that Jason Pierre-Paul voluntarily underwent the amputation because of all the options, treatment options for his finger and hand, that was deemed to be the one that would result in the fewest complications. Rappaport also reports that Jason Pierre-Paul had been undergoing a series of surgeries, inserting pins, skin grafts, things like that, to prepare for this amputation, which may be a reason, or at least one contributing factor, to Pierre-Paul being incommunicado when it comes to the New York Giants. The New York Giants sent their trainer, Ronnie Barnes, and former Giants linebacker Jesse Armstead down to Florida, where Pierre-Paul is currently in the hospital, in order to try to talk to him or to find out the extent of the injuries. He refused to meet with them. They left after 2 days. He hasn't really been answering anybody's phone calls from players, from his teammates, any texts. The Giants don't really have a lot of information on him. And that's because Jason Pierre-Paul is not in a good mood when it comes to the New York Giants. The Giants gave him the franchise tag this year worth $14.8 million. He is seeking a long-term deal. Reports are, after this accident, that a $60 million multi-year offer from the Giants was taken off the table, but it was a deal that Pierre-Paul was not going to sign anyway. So that's kind of a moot point. The question is now, though. He has not signed that franchise tag. He has not been at OTAs or minicamp and you know, holding out in protest. But maybe the Giants pull the franchise tag. That's an option, depending on what's going on with his injury, his recovery time. If he doesn't sign the tag, he doesn't really have to show up until he decides that he wants to show up. On the other hand, the Giants could put him on the non-football injury list, the NFI list. They could do that during training camp. They could do that to start the season, which would shelve him for at least 6 weeks. Or, again, they could withdraw the tag, which is actually what Pierre-Paul would like to have happen, because he would immediately become an unrestricted free agent and easily get the deal he's looking for from some other team that has a lot of money, of which there are numerous this time of year.
Even with only nine fingers.
Because it's going to be a difficult recovery. You know, it depends on the other complications of what other injuries his hand suffered. Obviously, there's going to be some skin graft things going on, stuff like that. But it's typically a pretty quick recovery when you're talking just from the finger amputation standpoint. And that quicker recovery will get him back on the football field faster. There is a potential, depending on the extent of the rest of his injuries, that he could be ready for week one.
Sure.
You know, we don't, you know, that's, we're over, you know, we're 2 months away. So it's potential, there's potential there that he could be ready at that time. And once he does get back to football, no matter who he plays for or how much money he's getting, he's going to want to be on the field rather than not be on the field. So I can understand him taking the path of least resistance when it comes to treatment.
Sure.
And opting for the amputation, because trust me, I think that's something that I would choose to do. You know, if things could get very complicated when you try to surgically reattach a finger or save a finger, complications such as rejection, infection, things like that, that are still in place, infection and things like that with the amputation. But, you know, it's far less risky. It's kind of a routine deal. It doesn't take a long time to amputate an index finger. It's not like amputating a foot or a leg. So,
I mean, I could probably do it in a couple minutes right now.
Let's not. But there are technical aspects to Jason Pierre-Paul's job as an edge rusher, a defensive end, and losing a finger. He's going to have to adapt his leverage techniques. He's going to have to adapt his techniques on, you know, grabbing and stuffing and moving around offensive linemen and other blockers and things like that. So that's going to take a period of adjustment. But, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul, he's pretty good at his job. So I don't expect all of a sudden that his career is going to implode.
No. I was thinking this earlier that you know, this sort of injury, it's not like something that really only surfaces for him when he's on the field. So he has to figure out how to, like, do things differently during
there are adjustments, but
I'm saying, like, losing your right index finger is something that you're going to be faced with figuring out how to deal with on a minutely basis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, every day, every
minute of every day,
everything you do with your hands.
Exactly. So as like 2 weeks go by or whatever after he gets it taken off and he's already learning. Well, let's say a couple weeks after it's healed. You know, he's just doing stuff around the house will help him get better at using his hands with one less finger.
Exactly.
And I think it's the same sort of thing on the field. It would be quicker than if it was just the sort of thing that he mainly only uses when he's playing the game.
And I forget who tweeted this earlier, but someone noted that Whitney Mercilus actually had to get half of his left index finger amputated after, a weightlifting accident or something in college. And he's managed to make his way to the NFL and there's no issue with his hand.
Sure, exactly.
So it's, you know, it's something that can be dealt with. I mean, it would be a different story if, let's say, Eli Manning blew off one of his fingers with a firework or got one of his fingers amputated after a fireworks explosion because he's a quarterback.
Right.
And you need that index finger to kind of get that ball to spiral and get out there. But Jason Pierre-Paul's not going to be throwing a lot of touchdown passes as a defensive end. So I think that he'll be fine. I am curious, though, to see how this affects the contract situation, just because things have gotten pretty chilly between the Giants and Pierre-Paul. I did see some things on Twitter. I don't know if they've been completely confirmed yet, that the Giants didn't even know that he was undergoing this amputation until they saw Adam Schefter report it on Twitter. There also, Mike Garofalo of Fox Sports also said that Pierre-Paul turned down medical help that the Giants offered to send him to a hand specialist in the New York City area, and that Pierre-Paul was not interested in having them foot any of his medical bills or anything like that. So I don't know. I mean, we're going to be dealing with a game of contract chicken between Pierre-Paul and the Giants regardless. So I'm curious to see what this injury does to affect that forward.
And I think that's probably a big part of why he hasn't been very vocal or anything in the last few days. It's a combination of just embarrassment from the incident itself, because it's just kind of like, you know, this completely avoidable thing that you, you know, you did to your finger. And
who knows? It could have been a faulty firework, though. I mean, there are many reasons for fireworks accidents beyond just plain user error or
stupidity. I wasn't there. I'm not going to claim I was there and I saw what happened or
exactly.
anything like that. So, yeah, very, very possible. But at least the whole idea of it sounds a bit trivial or silly or something like that. Because everybody's, and you can tell just the tone of everybody talking about it, so they're taking it a little bit lightly. And I think it's half of that and half this contract dispute situation, because if anything, this makes he knows that this thing is now potentially going to, you know, at least cause complications there. And it was a situation he was obviously not super happy about in the first place. So I think those two things together is why we haven't really heard anything. And that's, you know, that's definitely part of it as far as, you know, him not wanting to get back to them. He didn't want to talk to them in the first place.
Right.
And now they're like trying to help out while he did this thing that he's probably embarrassed about to himself. You know what I mean? So
while also continuing to be in a bad mood about his contract situation.
Exactly.
The other thing, you know, that I'm kind of curious going forward, because a lot of players in the NFL will have these contract clauses that say, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. For example, Ben Roethlisberger, he had that motorcycle, that near-fatal motorcycle accident 10 years ago or so, and now he has no motorcycles, period, written into his contract language. So I'm curious if the New York Giants and Tampa Bay Buccaneers in particular, because they've both been affected by this, might suggest such a clause to players in the future, or might ask potential draft picks at the scouting combine about responsible fireworks usage, or if some other teams, you know, start to think, oh, that's one risk that we didn't consider, so maybe we'll start, you know,
adding that to contracts
or trying to assess a player's interest in and usage of fireworks.
Sure.
Just because these kind of contract things come up, and it is a big deal. I mean,
and the 4th of July is always during this time of year.
It's always during this time of year where there's no oversight from coaches or GMs, and the players are left to their own devices. I mean, C.J. Wilson lost two fingers. Jason Pierre-Paul lost a finger, you know, and it's possible, especially in Wilson's case, that he could lose his NFL livelihood.
I don't know, I kind of feel like we should change the subject just because we're giving agents idea or teams ideas.
They don't listen to me. Please.
You never know.
But it's, you know, and it's something that other I've seen people bring up because it's worth bringing up just because
sure.
when a player, you know, ends up with a situation like that, like the Roethlisberger example, those clauses sometimes do go into the contract.
Yeah,
so
that
I'm
makes
curious
sense.
To see if that if that becomes the case for anybody in the future.
And we shall see.
And we shall see. Other things going on in the league right now, of course, this is also the time of year where we can get a few announcements about suspensions.
Of course.
I thought it would happen on July the 3rd, but I think we got them all on July 2nd, right? We got them all
last Thursday. Was the news dump.
Four suspensions coming down. New York Jets defensive lineman Sheldon Richardson, San Diego Chargers tight end Antonio Gates, and Dallas Cowboys linebacker Rolando McClain will all be suspended for the first four games of the NFL season for various violations. Some are PED violations, like in Antonio Gates' case. I think others are substance abuse. One game suspension also for Green Bay Packers defensive end Tone Jones, and that's related to marijuana, I believe. Okay, of course, all these players were properly contrite. At least three of them. I mean, the four-game suspensions, Sheldon Richardson, clearly, you know, the best player in a very strong New York Jets defense, but one of the best players on that defense and arguably the best player in the front seven. Of course, tight end Antonio Gates, who's a favored target of Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers. And my pick last year, my Pro Football Writers pick for comeback player of the year, Rolando McClain. He had an excellent season last year for the Cowboys in 2014, and they were definitely counting on him to reprise that, but he won't be able to do so until after the first four games of the season. But in the meantime, everybody is waiting with bated breath about the results of the Tom Brady appeal. We were not podcasting at the time. We were on our little hiatus.
Thank God.
In fact, it helped spur the hiatus for me because I just didn't want to talk about this at the time.
At least not for weeks on end.
But the outcome of the New England Patriots football deflation scandal came out with the Ted Wells report. And then the punishment came down. The Patriots are stripped of a couple of draft picks. They've been fined. Tom Brady is scheduled so far to miss the first four games of the 2015 NFL season.
And we're still waiting for the appeal.
He already had the appeal.
He had the appeal, but we're waiting for the results.
We're waiting for the results of the appeal. He had the appeal a couple weeks back. Lasted about 11 hours at NFL offices. No ruling on the appeal was expected to be made before July 4th, and that seems to have come to pass because we haven't heard anything yet. This obviously affects the season in the sense that, A, of course, it hurts the Patriots because it's Tom Brady, and not having him for any stretch of time, be it one game or four games, already puts them at a disadvantage. And the second part of that is the fact that the Patriots open the actual season on Thursday, September 10th against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, we have this nationally televised game, the big kickoff of the season. You're not going to have Tom Brady there. And that's just kind of deflates things a little. And I didn't mean to use that pun.
You did.
No, I did not. And then on the other hand, of course, the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't going to have running back Le'Veon Bell for the first three games of the season, stemming from his DUI and marijuana possession arrest last year. The thing to note, while everybody crows about when we're going to get the results of the Tom Brady appeal hearing, is that months ago, we're probably at a two to two and a half months ago at this point, Le'Veon Bell actually had his appeal hearing, and there's been no ruling on it. He knows nothing. Steelers know nothing. His agent knows nothing. Bell and the Steelers, of course, just moving forward, preparing as though Bell's suspension won't get reduced, and they'll be relying on D'Angelo Williams for the most part to carry the rock those three games. So while everybody's sitting here getting impatient over Tom Brady, though, you got to remember, Le'Veon Bell is just sitting in limbo for months now.
Well, I think the bigger point is, regardless of who we're talking about, we're waiting for their appeal results. What in the hell takes so long? You heard Le'Veon Bell's appeal in April. You heard Brady's appeal a couple weeks ago. And like, are you waiting for something else? Or it's completely a power play, because the whole thing's a farce anyway. You know, Goodell gives the suspension.
Right. It's mostly arbitrary, especially when you talk about things like this football deflation thing,
right,
where it's just so.
I almost feel like it's a negotiation. Like, Goodell comes out with what he says the suspension should be, then they appeal, and it's like he maybe starts it out thinking that he's going to have to negotiate later, you know what I mean? So maybe he starts high. And then, like, then in the appeal process is your counter offers and whatnot, and then
sure,
and then they whittle it down to something that's agreeable to all parties.
I don't expect the Brady suspension to be 100% overturned. I think that he'll be suspended for 2 games. I think it'll be reduced and it'll be cut in half. That's my opinion. I wouldn't be surprised if they actually.
I wouldn't be surprised they let him play and then they just found out another way to punish him somewhere else, or money, or
increase the fine, or take another
right.
draft pick or something. I don't know. But I think it gets reduced by half.
But I could definitely see that
Excuse
being a something that is, you know, that they eventually settle on. But at the same time,
well, they're not settling on anything. They're done talking now. They had their appeal. It's over. Now the NFL just has to review it.
I just meant Goodell making up his mind.
Yeah,
but what he wants to actually do.
It is frustrating in one sense, though, of course, because you file your appeal as a player for your suspension or whatever, and the league has 10 days, and they have to hear your appeal within 10 days, but then there's no time frame for exactly when they rule on that appeal.
Right, that's what I mean.
And the weird thing to me is, I seem to just recall in the past that when a player has his appeal hearing, the NFL has been pretty good about being timely in their ruling. And that's what I think is so weird, is that this is taking so long with Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, we could get the Tom Brady ruling tomorrow, or we could get the Tom Brady ruling the first week of training camp. And it's just kind of weird that all of a sudden this process is taking so much longer than I ever recall taking in the Goodell era.
It's also interesting that both of these guys are key contributors to their teams, and both of these teams face each other in the spotlight game that starts the season. So maybe Goodell's trying to figure out a way to save his face while working their way back in there. That way he can keep ratings up for that game. Not that the ratings won't be low or won't be high, but you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, the ratings will be through the roof.
Can he squeeze him back on the field and not, you know, screw himself up as far as trying to punish other people? I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with ideas why it takes so long. And
I mean, if
it seems
if,
like a stretch, but
you know, I don't know what happened in the appeal, so I don't know what kind of evidence, obviously,
right,
that the Patriots and Tom Brady and NFLPA.
From what I heard, it was nothing new. It was just kind of everybody was rehashing the same thing from when it was all
sure. Well,
at then
in that case, you know, then Goodell and the NFL will just have to kind of decide if whether or not the initial punishment was incorrect for whatever reason. But I would be surprised if Tom Brady doesn't miss time, just because the NFL's not going to hand down a 4-game suspension typically. I mean, they have handed down suspensions and then completely wiped them out, but generally on appeal they'll reduce them. So I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think that it would be wiped out completely. I think it'll be 2 games. And I don't think it's going to make that game unwatchable anyway.
If anything, it'll be
Matt Flynn or
just
Jimmy.
Just as intriguing for different ways.
Whether it's Matt Flynn or Jimmy Garoppolo or mm-hmm. whoever's under center, it's going to be interesting. The Pittsburgh Steelers, we don't even know if they're going to field an acceptable secondary this year. They certainly didn't last year. So it might not even matter who's throwing the ball against them. I mean, we just have to wait and see. I think that it, you know, it helps the playing field a little bit for the Steelers. I think the Steelers would have pretty much zero chance of winning that game going to Foxborough against Tom Brady with that questionable secondary and not having Le'Veon Bell. I think that would be a foregone conclusion that they lose that game.
Sure.
But now I guess it evens the playing field a little bit, that the Steelers don't have Bell. They have these issues in the secondary that may or may not be fixed, and then we're not really going to know until the season starts. at least they don't have to face Brady, who is going to do a better job of carving them up than Matt Flynn or Garoppolo.
Sure.
Probably. But we'll have to just wait and see. I'm sure we're going to hear rulings about both of these players at some point between now and the start of training camp. I'm sure the Patriots start probably around July 30th. The Steelers start July 25th because they have that extra preseason game against the Vikings.
I have a feeling like Goodell's just going to take a sweet time and we might find out like fourth week of preseason.
I don't think it's going to take that long because these teams have to be prepared. I mean, they're obviously preparing to not have Brady and to not have Bell because that's what you should do because they haven't been informed otherwise. But I don't think this is going to drag on too much longer.
I don't know. I guess I just envision him sitting back in a reclining chair, you know, tapping his fingers together and cackling.
It's possible. I mean, he is Roger Goodell.
I was going to say, that's how I always envision him. So. Yeah.
But if one appeal ruling comes down, whether Bell or Brady's, expect the next one to come down pretty soon after, if not the same day. I would assume that both of these rulings will be made public.
Yeah, he'll just like wake up.
Around the same time.
Today's the day.
Yes, today is the day. Who knows? Maybe we're waiting for something to come out that makes Goodell look even worse, and then he can cover it up by, we can talk about this instead. I don't know.
Who knows?
And in our final piece of news, the NFL has agreed to a 10-year, a working agreement with the Tottenham Hotspur of the Premier League over in England to use their stadium for an NFL game starting in 2018 when their brand new stadium is set to open. This is guaranteeing that the now expanded to 3 games per year in England will remain in effect for at least 2028. They're also looking at other venues in the United Kingdom to host NFL games, which means that the number of NFL teams having played in England is likely to go up. Everybody's going to be over there at one point or another in the next 10 years.
Is it me or is this weird? I mean, I don't know. I've had I know there was NFL Europe, and they've tried, you know, in the past to plant their seeds over there. And that's what this has been trying to do, is expand your brand globally. But I guess I don't understand what the obsession is with England. I mean, if you want to expand your brand over in Europe, you know, move it around, have it in different cities in Europe. And it can, you know, I'm sure that the interest is about the same, you know, from people that live in England, or unless there's more expats in England. I don't know. I don't know those stats or anything like that, but like, just this idea that not only are they forcing us to have more games across the Atlantic, it's always in England. it's the whole thing seems, it's like, again, this seems like Goodell's just got some obsession with being in England.
Well, I mean, he does. He wants to eventually have a team there permanently. What I'm happy about is that he sounds a little bit more open to Mexico City, but the logistics and the safety concerns and things like that would be a big deal. But Mexico City is just a hotbed of NFL fandom. I mean, I think we've talked about this how many times.
As far as outside of America, that's definitely probably the strongest, I'd say, you know,
sure,
is Mexico City. But yeah, like you said, and they have like smog issues there too, right?
There's
a lot of issues with Mexico City.
There's a lot of issues.
Altitude
and things like that. There are issues. There are logistics that would really have to be worked out there. Yeah, I mean, it's just, this is Goodell's little crusade to expand the NFL's profile in Europe
odd that it's so targeted to the UK. That's my only point with this, is that...
Well, there's reasoning behind it, but I'm not going to do that research, right? I'm not going to look up on my phone right now. But there,
I guess I was
Goodell
just
has made
aloud
multiple cases as to why this is in play. And the
I'm
expat
sure
community is
sense.
Part of it. The expat community is part of it. And it's easy to get to England from Germany or France or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
all
sure.
It's all the Eurozone now, right? So,
sure,
it's easy travel.
To me, it seems like there's a little more cachet to, like, this year we're in Paris, and next year we're wherever, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, the other problem, too, is why did NFL Europa fail? Because nobody went to the games. Nobody necessarily cared enough to be able to support
But that's what I'm saying. There's
teams
enough,
being located.
But there's enough in London to support going there every year for three different games in a
yes,
season?
Yes, of course. Yeah. They sell out Wembley three times a year.
I don't know. I'm still questioning the whole thing.
I mean, I don't like it. I don't like the way that it forces teams to adapt to that kind of travel schedule. And we've discussed in the past of how frustrating that would be for a team to be located full-time in England and things like that. That's what really bothers me, is that it's done without regard for the players' health, comfort, safety, and welfare. But nothing in the NFL is actually done
in
regard to player
safety
or health or welfare, and every attempt at doing so is actually a way for the NFL to cover its own butt.
The one thing I didn't mind was...
They don't have preventative measures in the NFL. They have corrective measures.
One thing I didn't mind was the breakfast game last year, because it was kind of cool to wake up at 8:30
Yeah, and they'll be doing that again next year. Or this season.
But otherwise, the whole thing just makes me scratch my head. I don't know. But, hey, it's not for me to know.
And finally, non-shocking news. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio is reporting that Jason Pierre-Paul's camp is mulling a lawsuit in relation to the leaked medical documents. HIPAA does not cover these private individuals, such as Adam Schefter being given this information. So Schefter and ESPN are not in any trouble. Schefter was well within his journalistic right. He was given a piece of information. He's allowed to report on it. He's allowed to put that out there. It wasn't very classy to send that picture of it. It's just, you know, it's not, but it's not illegal. It's slightly on the gray
slightly
side
immoral.
Of unethical.
Yeah.
Yes. But if it's clear, if that's the case, if what Mike Florio is reporting is true, then that means that Jason Pierre-Paul did not give his consent, or his agent or anybody acting on his behalf did not give their consent to have that medical document given to the media, which means that whoever did so at this hospital in Florida is going to get sued, and the hospital is going to get sued. And as Florio has pointed out, Florida juries in particular have been very generous with their verdicts when it comes to people getting their medical records and record privacies violated. So that could be coming.
You know, it still could be Schefter if he, like, you know, somehow extorted somebody into giving up the information.
He wouldn't need to. He's not going to. ESPN does not have to worry about this at all.
It's kind of funny to, like, think of, you know, Adam Schefter as, like, this evil journalist.
No. And he's not in trouble. He can't get in trouble. There would be no grounds for a lawsuit against Schefter or ESPN. That is not on the table. The only person who committed a crime here, if a crime was indeed committed, was the person at the hospital who gave Schefter access to these documents.
Yeah, you don't know the real Adam Schefter. Sorry, I'm really just trying to spread rumors here. So
don't listen to Brian, people. He's not even a credentialed member of the NFL media.
Feel free to run with those rumors, though.
Please don't. Don't attack those rumors to my name.
I'm here for witty conversation, so. It's not for NFL expertise.
Oh, well, I've been waiting so long for witty conversation. But I think that about wraps things up for our first episode back here in the summer of 2015 here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Next week we'll be back, and we will start doing some divisional previews. We'll start with, of course, the AFC North, because that's the division I know so well, and we'll kind of talk about maybe we'll talk a little bit about the NFC North as well. So.
Maybe we'll start previewing.
We'll start previewing some divisions.
Just to kind of get. Actually, the good thing about that is, like, even though you're still a couple weeks away from the very earliest parts of the season, being people even showing up to camp or whatever, you at least feel like you're starting to get back into it, because you're forward looking. You know what I mean? You're
exactly.
Talking about what the coming season's going to be.
Exactly. So we'll start in on that next week, and of course we'll talk about any major news that does arise in the National Football League, such as a ruling on Tom Brady's and Le'Veon Bell's appeals, for example, or the next step in this Jason Pierre-Paul saga, which is going to be was going to be interesting this summer and fall regardless, and now has taken a disturbingly strange medical twist. So with that about does it for this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Of course, I am Andrea Hengst. I cover the Steelers and Browns for BleacherReport.com. I also cover the Browns for the Orange and Brown Report at Scout.com, which you can find at cle.scout.com. That's cle.scout.com. I do some salary cap work there and a few other things. You can also find me on Twitter at fball_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea. And if you want to find all of my articles in one convenient place, you can like my writer page on Facebook. That's facebook.com/ahangstnfl. That's AHANGSTNFL.
And of course, I'm Brian, and I'm not found nearly as many places. I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed our first show back. I hope we didn't seem a little too rusty for y'all, but we'll get back in the swing of things.
Yeah, I think we got it going there by the end.
Yeah, you know? We'll get back in the swing of things by next week for sure. So thanks for everybody for being patient these past 2 months, and thank you for listening. It's good to be back. It's good to know that football is drawing ever closer and that we are much farther away from the last Super Bowl than we are to week one kicking off, which is something we haven't been able to say till a month ago. So
it feels good.
It feels good.
We're downhill.
It's all downhill from here. And then it's uphill again.
Of course.
And then it's downhill again. Something like that. So anyway, thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you next week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace.